One time years ago, we even created a, you know, within the studio, some guys put together a engagement claptrap video for a guy who was going to be proposing to his girlfriend.
I don't have time for this. I've got better things to do than help some schmuck hit on his main squeeze.
You're listening to the CG Spectrum Podcast. CG Spectrum College of Digital Art and Animation offers specialized career training for the film and game sector. Join our hosts, Career Development Manager Maxine Schnepp and CGS Mentor Justin Mulman, as they chat with industry experts doing cutting-edge work in film and games. Now, on to the show.
I'm Maxine. How you doing?
I'm pretty good, Justin. What's going on?
Not much. I just got a chance to talk to a buddy of mine, Carl Shedd, for this new episode covering what it's like to start a studio, a game development studio specifically.
Oh, cool. I know nothing about that.
Yeah, it seems like we're seeing a lot of studios actually kind of spawn up with just the ability to have like all these tools at your fingertips. So Carl's like, he's been in the industry for a long time. He's worked at ID Software and a couple other small ones. But then most recently, he's been at Gearbox Software as a world builder and director, and like has done everything in between at that studio. So I'm excited to kind of see his experience about starting this new studio and like what it would take, because he left a solid job and career to like pursue this passion. And in the episode, we dig into a lot of that, like, you know, what it took to actually leave, what you learn when you're at that studio, and his process of trying to get his project funded. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're going to talk with Carl Shedd. He's not only a mentor with us at CG Spectrum, but he's also a veteran video game developer. He's worked at a bunch of studios. I would like to list them all, but I'd rather have him do it because I feel like he's going to do it more justice. But how you doing, Carl?
Doing good, Justin. How are you?
I'm good. A little cold. It's like negative 10 windshield in Chicago right now. So.
Oh, man. It's like 48 here and I'm frigid. So I feel bad for you.
That's why we do video games. We didn't choose construction working outside.
That's right. I can hide inside. Yeah. My office is really toasty. So
tell us about like your background. And I know that me and you have pretty much been in games about the exact same time. But yeah. You've worked at a couple really cool studios, and you're up to something really cool now. So
I started in the game industry in 2004, working for Gearbox Software on the Brothers in Arms franchise. And then my career grew with Gearbox for the majority of my career was with Gearbox Software. In 2004, as you know, level design was a broader skill set, you know, that's not really the right thing to say. There was just a lot more to do in that one role because the role was a little more simple than things are today, making games. So, you know, we were responsible for doing layout and combat and then set dressing and lighting and all that stuff. It was that kind of all housed in one home. But then as the industry grew and the trades grew and became more complex, those roles split and divided. And as those roles split at Gearbox, I was given the opportunity to kind of grow new departments. So level art was one that I helped start at Gearbox, which as people watching, environment art is a similar term, but essentially decoration and lighting. And then in 2009, I had an opportunity to work on id Tech 5. It was when Megatexture was all the rage.
Yeah, that's when Rage was out, right?
That's right. So I got the opportunity to go to id Software, which was really just down the road from Gearbox. It was, you know, a 5-minute drive. So I went down and worked
with them. Were there a lot of people just going back and forth between the two?
There were quite a few people that went from one to the other. Yeah. Yeah. It was just nice to have those two prestigious studios kind of local to one another.
I remember when, I've always been a fan of id Software, but I remember when I was at Raven for a little bit and we were using id Tech like 3.5 on a Wolfenstein game. And we're like, oh, this is amazing. And then like when they're showing off everything that you can do with Rage and just growing up loving Mad Max, that looked like the natural progression of it's still to this day, that game is like, I feel like it floated under the radar for some reason, but visually it's amazing.
Yeah. It still really holds up surprisingly well. And you know, the tools that they had created for interfacing with the technology was incredible. And, you know, it was just a once in a lifetime opportunity. I had a great relationship with Gearbox through all of that. And they kind of understood from the time I got hired at Gearbox, I was always kind of an id fanboy. So for me, it was a bucket list thing to kind of go and be a part of a teammate working on a game like that, you know, pushing the envelope.
So this happens a lot, I think, with people bouncing from studio to studio. But it seemed like you handled it the right way because
you left Gearbox and they understood and eventually you went back to Gearbox. How did you handle that? Because I feel like, you know, I know I've left studios on good, I always feel like I leave studios on good terms, and I know that what I would do is usually just wait till projects, but I feel like there's so many people that don't realize. And I know a couple, even from this past year, that would just jump from studio to studio to studio. I'm like, man, like, you're not even finishing like any production cycles. I feel like that could leave, I mean, not all the studios are the same. I get that there's once in a lifetime opportunities, but I feel like there's a good way to do it.
Yeah. I feel like making sure that you're not leaving people strung out or hung out with, you know, project deadlines coming in looming, you know, in my case, we had finished Borderlands 1 and I'd worked on the early DLC, was a zombie island of Dr. Ned for Borderlands, which was a lot of fun. And so we had finished and shipped that content, and then the id opportunity had come up. But, you know, ultimately, as fun as it was working on those tools, I really did like the Gearbox culture, and it felt a lot more like home to me. And so I wanted to go back, and Borderlands kind of in the background had become really successful, which I was really obviously proud of that, right? Because we were kind of the little engine that could there.
Yeah.
And so when that game started getting reception, and, you know, I'd still get lunch with one of the owners from Gearbox occasionally. We were good friends. And so, you know, when Rage was done, it was like, hey, do you want to come back?
And I was like,
I do. Yeah. Yeah. But I was ready. It was actually very mutual. We were both, you know, they wanted me back and I wanted to come back. And so I was with them for another 10 years. And then ultimately, you know, I got to the point in an age where it was an exciting opportunity with some other developers to, you know, try and see if we could push, you know, making our own games. Which I think is a dream every kid has when they decide they're going to make games and they say, hey, one of these days I want to try and run my own studio. And so, you know, a couple of us left together. We had a good opportunity and we just decided to give it a go. And we left on pretty good terms with Gearbox there as well. They were very supportive of us. They had a lot of mutual respect. We were in a great time as a studio to make that transition, Gearbox was. So... hopefully it ensures mutual success for both parties.
And I think that's something that not a lot of people realize. And, you know, when me and you, like, I started the industry like around 2002, so around almost the same time, but development teams were smaller and they're getting bigger now, but it's always the same core people that are attached to these studios. So I've seen people leave studios in bad ways that just destroys their whole network. And if you can, like, I think as creatives, we all kind of want to treat the industry like a buffet line. And you can do that if you, because it's like, hey, I want to work on this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
But if you're doing it, like you said, the right way, by being respectful, giving them plenty of notice, making sure you're not leaving anyone high and dry. You know, if you can't, I mean, we all understand people have to go to the bigger, better places or even just different places. So,
yeah.
But that's a prime example of being able to, hey, come back. And then them being supportive, because you never know when maybe you're building your new studio that you're at. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you need to get other people. And if your reputation is, oh, you just left this whole team high and dry, then people are like, well, I don't want to work for him. He's not going to want to do this stuff. And it's one of those few things that I don't think enough people really pay attention to is your reputation. And it's not even that hard to do, if I'm being honest. You just have to be nice.
Yeah, and the industry is way smaller than you think it is before you get into it. You know, that you're constantly running into people that you've met and worked with before, and the relationships that you form, you know, in those different locations, if you foster those, they will matter later. I mean, I still am in pretty constant contact with a lot of my friends from id Software, even though we were only working together on the Rage team for 2 years. We still maintained a pretty awesome relationship, and we'll still kind of text each other here and there every couple months to keep in touch. And, you know, as you get to a certain age in the industry with a certain level of experience, everybody starts to think the same things. Everyone starts to think, like, when is it going to be time for me to give this a shot?
You know? I can do this. I'm sick and tired of that person telling me what to do. And I'm with you. I mean, me and you have actually talked about other stuff on our own, like, constantly. Yeah. You know, the ironic thing is now it's like I've been teaching for 15 years and I have students that I taught my first year that are like art directors at studios. And I'm like,
that's crazy. They're like, that's awesome.
They're like, yeah, whenever. And they'll reach out to me still like, hey, come work with us. Did you great? Cause in your mind, like if you, we all have that one lead, that one person we worked with, yes. Even if it like you mentioned, like you still talk to the people at Rage, it's like it you are in the trenches, like, you know, obviously game development is not like anything like more brutal jobs, but when you're doing something, you're creating it and you're solving all these problems, you got pressures from publishers and maybe like producers and team leads. Like there's like that bond. Like I still talk, like one of my very first jobs with it is a studio called High Voltage. I still talk to people from there.
Yeah.
It's like, we made it through there. We bonded.
That's very true. There is something that happens through the course of the development that does create a really, really strong bond, because it's kind of, you know, we're not doing physically demanding work in a traditional sense, right? Like none of us are really lifting anything heavier. We're straining our backs in different ways. Like I don't want to show you my profile so you can see my terrible posture from years of like sitting at a computer. But it's still emotionally straining. You know, everyone has the pressure of wanting to make a great game. That's the one thing that gamers, I think sometimes they don't understand as they see a game that maybe doesn't come out to the standard that they want. There were probably financial pressures and situations behind that, but I bet it would be really hard to find an artist or a programmer, or, you know, engineer, designer on that team who wasn't more disappointed than a gamer if it wasn't as successful as hoped, right? Yeah. Because you want and you push. And so that emotional strain, when you kind of endure that with a group of people in a room, definitely does change your relationships. Your work shouldn't be your family and your work shouldn't be your home, but the reality of it is sometimes when you go through those stressful encounters, your relationships almost feel more familial, because you become, if you're working with good people, you're looking out for one another's mental health. And
working in games is a very deliberate choice. Like it's a very specialized school, very specialized software and tools. And I feel like people who generally work in games and thrive are not someone who just loves playing games, but someone who just likes to learn and create and problem solve. Yeah. And that passion, sometimes you can get sucked in. I mean, I know when I'm working on projects, like I won't be able to sleep, not because I'm stressed, but because it's like, oh, I can't wait to work on what I want to work on.
Exactly.
Now, having said that, let's talk about your studio. I can't imagine what it's like to just be like having all these ideas and like getting all that stuff started. Like, where do we start?
Yeah, well, I think I'll leap off right where you were. It's a whole new set of skills to learn, right? Because now you have partners and you all have individual and mutual skill sets. And, you know, in our case, we all worked together in some cases, I've worked with some of those guys for 13 or 14 years throughout the, you know, inception of Borderlands through Borderlands 3 and then beyond. And, you know, we've always had that one common pillar of Borderlands, like we're working on this, we really understand this IP and we know exactly what it needs. And then, you know, you get on your own, you go, hey, like, well, we all kind of have a similar vision, right? Let's make, and then we all pitch out our Venn diagram and we're finding slivers, you know, because we had the one common theme that tied us together. It's kind of like if you're working with a group of musicians in a band, like I'll just use, you know, something like AC/DC generically, because everyone in the world has listened to AC/DC. It would be probably pretty amazing if those guys went and all did individual projects, how not like AC/DC most of it would sound, right? Like, because there's that common bond that pulls them together to create a sound, right? And so for us, it was initially, you know, and I would imagine this is true of any group of people, when you get together to form that studio, is kind of rebalancing what is important to each of you and then figuring out how to coalesce those different interests and visions and passions. You might have a guy who's into RTS games. You're like, wait, we've been making shooters for 15 years. What? Yeah. You know, and so everybody kind of has to figure out where they're going to compromise and come together. And I think that's been one of the things that's been interesting and kind of fun. We've kind of grown a lot.
I would imagine that there's probably a hard, I mean, I'm just assuming, probably a hard time kind of nailing down the exact idea and who's doing what when you all have these strong opinions and you all have seasoned backgrounds. We're like, we should do it this way. And at a certain point, that honeymoon period, does that stick along for a while where you're like super excited?
Yeah. I think each time that we dig into a new problem, you know, we're kind of learning exactly what you said. The honeymoon phase is a wonderful way to put it. And we've been very sober. We had some awesome people who had been had been entrepreneurs in the game industry prior to us that gave us some great guidance. And some of the best advice we got early was like, hey, you guys are essentially entering into a marriage together. So, you know, cut the BS right up front and get right down to talking real with one another. Because if you kind of in a very early formative phase like we're in now, you know, you're paying for your own salary out of your savings or however you're managing that. And so you're spending your own money every day. Yeah. And so any moment that you're not being honest with one another and really taking that workman mentality of just being like, all right, this is the problem that needs to be solved. I'll pick this up and you pick that up. So we got that advice early on and that helped. We still had some of that honeymoon phase, but I think, again, most of the folks that are working with us at Ruckus right now have been in the industry between 15 and 20 years. And so we've all, you know, we're used to being mature and taking making compromises where you need to in order to make something work. So I think, you know, the years of game development prior to that in lead positions has helped a lot.
I was going to say now, how did you go about assembling the team and like choosing who you guys want to work with? Because how many people are working with you right now?
There are 8 people.
How do you divide up like who does what? Because I feel like there is a lot of overlap. And even with someone like yourself, like I feel like your skill sets are so varied. And I feel like anything that I might understand is like, it's like there's this balance between, all right, creative and a lot of business and logistics and planning, like you said, trying to figure out down the road where you see yourself.
Yeah, yeah. For us, it's we had a very, you know, good dispersion of primary skills, mm-hmm. which is fantastic. So we all kind of slot into a pretty reasonable position naturally, and then we just kind of spread those out. So like for me, when I'd left Gearbox, I was in a position called world director. And so kind of like I mentioned at the beginning, level designer used to be a lot more broad of a term than it is now, because now there's so much that is in the level design position. You couldn't do, you know, lighting is so technical now, you can't do lighting while maintaining combat and scripting and missions. Yeah. You know, mission team exists now because if you're trying to actually put meaningful animations. And so what we had done is created an organization where we had someone to help make sure those, you know, 4 departments were neatly pieced together. So a bit of what happens now with a smaller team is we kind of go backwards in that evolution a little bit, right? So me, even though, you know, I haven't been a combat designer in a while, has to kind of dust off some of that and think with that brain a little bit again.
But I feel like once you've done that before, especially being in development as long as you have and being in meetings and just seeing the pipeline, I don't think you ever really lose it. I mean, I always equate being a game developer, it's not one-to-one, but it's kind of like if you're a contractor, there's different roles, like an electrician, a plumber, and all that stuff. But like, if you've done it, you understand how they all fit together. Maybe you're not specifically doing one thing, but it's like you said, if there's an 8-person team, you have to wear more than one hat, especially in the early days before you're getting when you're making your demos and whatnot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it definitely does. You get spoiled too, you know, when you have very specialized roles in studios, bigger studios. When you know, I started the lighting team at Gearbox, it was super exciting because holy crap, I can focus on this one really special thing that I love doing more than anything else. And all the other stuff that is kind of fun or not as fun goes away. Right.
Yeah.
So you get a little bit spoiled in being able to literally focus on the one.
Yeah, because you can dig in and learn and watch videos and geek out and just get into not just the technical, but the creative and like the why. And usually when you're in game development, I mean, especially in the early days, like when me and you were like early 2000s, it's like, no, there's not enough. The teams aren't big enough. I feel like pipelines were like not as difficult. The teams are smaller, but I feel like the development times were way smaller. So we just had to like crunch things out and our budgets were smaller. So how do you think, you know, you got these 8 people, you went from working with how many people were at Gearbox at the time, roughly, when you were there?
500-ish. Yeah.
So you're going from 500 to 8 people working on a AAA game studio, which probably had years and funding. And now you're working in indie and you're working with 8 people and you're funding your own stuff. What's been like the biggest shift from that? Like, I feel like I have some ideas, but like, what do you feel like your biggest, like the shift?
I think, you know, with us right now, a lot of what we're doing is, you know, meeting partners, you know, and trying to get ourselves out there and find other people to work with. So there's a bigger shift on business and strategy and things like that, that we're going to, you know, need to have a plan for the future, budgets for the future. So it's been a little less development. And then when we do get the time to really buckle in and focus on the game we're making, It's about distilling it down to the most important elements that we need to really share with potential future partners what it is what our vision is. You know, that can be difficult because in the past you were like, well, we've got this department that just handles all this UI, or we've got this department that just handles rigging and all these other things. And now it's like, no, we've got anything that we want to do, we are going to have to handle. And we have, you know, worked with a few contractors here and there where we need that specialized love. But I think that's been one of the interesting things is reorienting ourselves in the short term to being an efficient small machine that doesn't overscope itself.
I know usually at bigger studios, like AAA ones, there's like set work hours. This being literally like this, like it's like a labor of love, passion product. Like it's not just a studio. It's like the amount of time and effort and your financial, like this is more than just a studio. Are you finding yourself sticking to like 9 to 5 hours? Or are you guys creeping out? It's just constantly like, we'll work until we work.
I think we try to still maintain, you know, a feeling of a office hours. You know, we recently started, you know, just getting together at 10 a.m. and going over what we've been working on, you know, like a loose stand up. But yeah, we've also kind of, you know, in a desire to get that more, you know, community feeling, we've started to just go into like Discord rooms, right, throughout the day. You know, come in, sit down, just be in the room. If you don't want to talk, mute yourself, turn off your camera, but at least you're in there to hear other people talk. So it kind of gets that feeling like we, like Gearbox had a really nice office structure where we had 6 to 8 people in an office, sometimes 4, but you know, you had that life was going on right outside of your head. That, you
know. Sometimes I'd go to class, like even now, cause I've just been remote with everything going on with the pandemic, and I like having work sessions like I've had with you guys before. We just literally jump on to Discord and just hear everyone kind of like, just like goof off a little bit, but then talk tech. And then someone will say something like, well, hey, how did you do that? There's like, there's something about being in a studio that I really do miss, because it's this combination of, you're kind of like having fun with your friends who are your coworkers, and you're geeking out about shows and movies and games. But then these random moments where someone will stumble upon a question, and then everyone will stop what they're doing and kind of be like, well, hey, how do you do that? Because it doesn't feel like you're ever, I feel like that's something that a lot of people don't realize, is that's why it's so important to talk and communicate and be able to articulate what you're struggling with.
Yeah.
Especially in a small team like you have. 8 people is a great size to be able to problem solve all these new issues that you're going to be approaching.
It is. And you're exactly right. Like we've missed that through the last 2 years, you know, even before I had left Gearbox, was that sometimes people who are a bit more quiet or maybe not as excited about, I mean, I remember at the beginning of the pandemic when we were first doing Zoom, you know, this was awkward for me to like be talking in my office by myself. You know, I got used to it. I'm a fairly social person, you know, I'm not really that shy. So, but you know, I had a lot of folks on my team who were, and so I would notice some of them would be left out of conversations and meetings just because it wasn't comfortable to press that call button. Now you've added a level of, you know, social anxiety to a conversation. If you're already kind of an introverted individual and you have to walk into a room and bother somebody, that already makes you feel stressed out. But there's something about that call button where, you know, like, oh no, the other person's going to be bothered by me calling them, which is not the case. Right. But that's how it feels. Right. So I saw that a lot with people. And so for us, I think having that room is just, like you said, it's an open invitation to get to know each other better. You know, we hear each other's families in the background, so you can inquire about how the kids are doing, and it makes it a little bit more personal than just work too, which is what's hard when everyone's remote for years.
Hey everyone, a quick shout out to CG Spectrum for helping make this podcast happen.
CG Spectrum is an online animation, VFX, digital painting, and game development school that prepares you for a career in film and games. Whether you're just starting out or you're upgrading your skills, get personalized career training and mentorship from industry pros who have worked on blockbuster films and best-selling games. Courses are 100% online, and you can choose from one-on-one private mentorship options or group classes with just 4 students max. You'll also get access to career support services and join an awesome community full of like-minded creatives just like you. Learn more at cgspectrum.com. We're bringing the industry to you.
Now you can listen to me talk some more.
Because this is more of a labor of love, do you, and you mentioned having like some like key criteria that you're sticking to, like how do you
navigate keeping your artistic vision of what you truly wanted to do when you set out, as opposed to making, not necessarily cashing out, but making, it's, you know, when you have the idea, it's like a sharp point, but then you make always like, all right, I'll change this. I'll make all these different amendments. And then it becomes an idea that wasn't originally what you wanted to do. And before you know it, yeah, it's like, well, we started off to make a new studio, to do something different, but now we're doing literally the same thing that we've been doing. How do you planning on balancing that? I mean, are you guys just have like a couple core pillars that you're just like, always do this? Do you check each other on that kind of stuff? If someone's like, well, what if we, no, we started this to do this, we're going to maintain this.
Yeah. I think we've done that last bit a little bit, where we go, hey, what is really important to us? You know, it's, as part of what you said, there's a honeymoon phase, getting to know each other, understanding, like I said, we're all veterans. So we kind of set our baselines up in the beginning, what we wanted to do, what was going to be the most important to us. And really the core tenet of our studio outside of just developing games was making sure that we were considerate of how, you know, the culture that we were creating for our employees. Because again, Gearbox had a really good culture. Everyone felt like family there, and everyone got along there. And so when you leave a place and you're trying to do something new, you also go like, hey, what was so great? Well, you know, we had some great things there. Let's make sure that we try and capture that, you know, ultimately maintaining a business and trying to decide like, okay, well, what markets do we want to reach? How many customers do we want to reach? What is the vision for the game we have? And I think it's just a sober reality. Anyone who wants to start a business needs to know what their goal is and realize the sacrifices that are going to be important to that. You know, we're obviously still very early, and who knows, you know, this time next year, maybe we've doubled or tripled or quadrupled our size, or maybe there's still eight of us, or maybe we've decided to do other things. So you never know. We're still young. Yeah. As a studio, but we all knew that we were going to have to make certain creative compromises. Again, you've got eight people with different visions. We have an idea of the size and the scope of the studio we want to make, where we want to be. We would like to be in the AAA space.
Yeah.
And so with that comes some, you know, some compromises. But I do think when you go into business and you say, hey, I want to start a studio, there's a very big distinction between, you know, I want to be in the indie space or I want to be in the AAA space. The scope and of the budgets you're going to be asking investors for. And I think a lot of times the larger the budgets and the bigger the teams and the higher your aspirations are for, you know, competing in the AAA space, the more compromises you'll need to be willing to make sure that you're being intelligent with your spending.
I know one of the things you're kind of known for, and if people aren't aware of Carl's stuff, just go on ArtStation. We'll plug it later, but he just cranks out content that's amazing. I think that's one of the reasons why we first started talking, was just kind of like our shared interest in not only the content that you're doing, but like the horror genre and everything like that.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, you did a good job of balancing that stuff when you were at a Gearbox. How are you balancing that now? Is the project that you're trying to make right now representing your personal interests of like, we're doing this here, this is still here, I'm still going to work on what I want to do at night? Are you finding a good balance between your passion projects and your professional work?
Yeah, I think so. They're still separate components. But, you know, right now with Ruckus being the primary goal, trying to make sure that we can secure funding and get you know, what we're working on to a state where we're proud to share that with people, you know, that changes my focus right now. Yeah. You know, obviously was very passionate about the work I was doing at Gearbox, and, you know, through the course of shipping games would have to put any personal stuff to the side for months at a time to make sure we were making high quality shipping products there. But at the end of the day, you know, the funding was covered. You know, we're a very successful studio. We had a really nice, product schedule. We knew what franchise we would be working on for a while. And so that allowed the employees to be a little bit more, you know, you live a more balanced life.
Oh, yeah. There's certain things you don't have to worry about. You just come in and like, I'm going to work on something awesome.
And that's a wonderful part about working at a great studio. But now that, you know, I'm an owner, and like I said, this is all about spending what amount of investment that you've saved for, you know, 15, 16 years to buy yourself six months to a year of time to try this endeavor. It's been a lot more focused on making sure that whatever free cycles I have in my brain is trying to do whatever I can to set Ruckus up for success from my part.
I mean, I feel like there's got to be some overlap too, but like when you're working on content, is there ability for you to be like, hey, I'm going to dabble in more of this like lighting and figuring some stuff out that you can carry that over, especially with Unreal 5 being a big thing. Yeah. I mean, can you talk about what like tech you're planning on using? Are you going to be sharing that kind of stuff?
Yeah. We're hoping to use Unreal 5 as soon as we can. Yeah. We love the Unreal platform. All of us have been very comfortable using it for, I mean, I think my entire career.
Yeah. You guys have been using it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Gearbox has used it since the first IP that we created. I mean, Gearbox had used, you know, different things in the past when working on Half-Life. But from the time we created our first IP at Gearbox, which was Brothers in Arms, we were using the Unreal Engine. So it's been home for me as a professional and a hobbyist. So it's the same thing is true for all of us at Ruckus. We love Epic and we love the Unreal Engine. And
is this like one of those, like in terms of your life, your goals, your desire to make art and stuff like that? Is this one of your like bucket list things to do this, like you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, for sure. And one of my last conversations with Randy before I left is, you know, he's been very supportive of us. And he said, no, I get it, man. He's like, you guys are at that age. You're at that point in your life and your career where you've got a little burn. And you've got the chance to kind of do this, you know, once in a lifetime, you know, give it a go. And look, it's not going to be for everybody, right? No. And that's okay.
It's hard to wake up and constantly be motivated and staying on point. Because when you have the comfort and security of working in a studio like Gearbox with an existing franchise, like you said, that's successful with a large team, there is a little bit of like, you can come in and it's okay if you have an off day or if you're okay. Like,
Yeah.
When you're with a small crew and you're climbing uphill, it's like you can't just like, you have to always like push through stuff. Like when I was at bigger studios too, I'd be like, that's an off day. Yeah. But like if you're doing it yourself, there's no off days.
That's exactly right. And it makes it more stressful when you have those off days, when things aren't working right and you're crashing or you're just hitting a wall and you're like, oh my gosh, I gotta figure out how to get through this. You know, for me, to your question, it was absolutely a bucket list thing. You know, yeah. I think it was no illusions. I didn't think that it was going to be this, guys, we just go out there and everything comes together, right? It was very sober for all of us.
Everyone's going to give us money.
Yeah, right. It was very sober for all of us. We were like, hey, this is going to be, you know, a real challenge. Is everyone up for it?
I think that's something that people just don't realize either. They think, you think the word video games and there's this misconception of like, oh, it's fun. I mean, like those commercials from like the 90s where people would turn around in the chair and be like, I make video games. It's like, no, it's a lot of hard work. And even beyond that, the personality management, I think, is something that people always overlook. And again, 8 people, but you're all different creatives. You all have different kind of like skill sets, and you're going to approach solving that problem in a different way, as well as you know each other. So having said that, it's like, you know, you've given us a bunch of tips already, but like what like main tips would you give to people who are thinking about starting their own company? Just from like, what do you wish that you knew before jumping in?
Let's see. That's a great question. Like I had mentioned before, we were very fortunate that we had a network of folks that we had known. You know, some of us knew a person here or a person there, and they gave us very, very sober, you know, warnings. You know, there's one gentleman we spoke to who said, "Don't do it," but if you're going to do it, I'll tell you how to do it. Right.
He had the disclaimer right off the bat.
It's miserable. Don't ever do it, is what he said. But he gave us incredible feedback and you know, be very honest with yourself too about what you want to do, because a lot of people go like, well, I'm just going to go make my own studio because then I get all the wins and I get to do whatever I want. But I think to be successful, you know, again, you're going to need a team of people who can coalesce in a vision, and that vision isn't just the game you're making. It's how you want to treat people, what kind of like vacation policies you want to provide, what kind of healthcare you want to provide for your employees. You're really getting into territory where you're talking about a lot more than just creative work, right? So
How do you foster professional growth and also personal growth? And I see that a lot of the studios, like you'll see these new positions popping up where it's like art people's manager or something like that, where their job is not necessarily to manage the content you're making, but they're to help nurture your growth as an artist at that studio. Cause that, you know, like you said earlier in this conversation, there's not that many people in game development. It grosses more than music and movies, but we have a fraction of the people that can do it. And even in that whole pool of talent, there's an even smaller amount of people like yourself that are like your left and right brain, where you're able to do the creative, but you can still talk about the business side, communication. Like you're talking about right now, hey, we need to set up a proper health plan. Like, where do we see growth? You want to be able to like hold on and be like, no, you stay with me. But you can't, like, you can't force them. So what do? You try to, you know, nurture their growth, understand if they need to go do what they need to do, kind of like what Gearbox did with you. They're like, you know, if they handled you leaving in a different way, I'm sure you wouldn't have gone back.
That's right. That's right. And they've always, you know, I think that's a super important component for me when I was, you know, I think that changed how I, you know, treated people as a leader too. Whenever I would have folks that were, you know, leaving or, you know, it was time for them to move on, making sure that they felt supported, you know, from me, and making sure that I never wanted somebody to leave with a sense of guilt, because they shouldn't, you know. That's another important component for people. Back to our questions earlier in the conversation where we were talking about people jumping studios, is the other part is to work places that make you happy. And then be respectful of the places you're working and the people you're working with, right? Yeah. And I think it goes both ways for the employers, is to understand that, you know, different people have different goals. People change too throughout life.
Yeah.
You know, a game that, or a franchise that you loved working on, that you couldn't wait to work on, you might work on it for 5 or 6, 7 years, ship 2 or 3 of them, and say, it's time for me to try something new. And it has nothing to do with it. Could be a city you're in. You could say, you know, I'm living in Frisco, Texas, and I absolutely love it here, but it's flat. And there are no mountains, there's no scenery.
Yeah.
I want to go skiing. You know, I can't live here forever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think what's happening too is I've worked at a bunch of studios that did things right. And the ones that I always learn from the most are the ones that do things wrong. I've seen in person a bunch of times that whole Andy moment from The Office, like someone punching a wall. But you saw that before it happened. You saw like weeks or months of that person traveling. You're like, oh no. And then like that moment happens. Because it gets stressful. But I'm a big believer that it's stressful is always manageable if you just have open communication and plan.
I'll say for me, you know, your satisfaction and you know, what's rewarding about your job will change. Some things will always be there, which is, you know, knowing that you've made something that gamers respond to, they love it. You know, there's a component of making things that your peers react to, which is really important. Especially the more accomplished you become in your own career, the more excited you are almost by, you know, hearing praise from your peers in the industry, you know, knowing that they say, hey, you guys did a really good job on this thing that we're also, you know, really good at. So I think that's something that comes with it too. And then, you know, for me going from being, you know, somebody who's just creating content to then managing, you know, it's a different skill set. Fortunately, at Gearbox, I was still able to do lighting and level art even as I became a lead and a manager. There's always opportunity to keep that, scratch that itch. But there are other ways to then get excitement when you're mentoring and teaching and leading other people. You know, you start to get a different level of success by seeing people grow.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was a fantastic artist that I worked with who, when we had started a DLC, they had been used to a structure that was, you know, fairly specific. But what we were wanting to do in the space we had was give people more autonomy and more personal ownership. And watching this individual go from being very scared to step 1 foot forward to then managing, you know, every task that their pod was working on. And now this person is managing a team that's creating weapons for a Borderlands game. Really, the only role I had was just to say, hey, you're awesome. You can do this.
I think that's a very undervalued thing too. Like, you know, the average person that is in this is like, they're not very sociable people. And I feel like it's like, you know, they're more introverted, and that's just completely fine. Maybe they get a little more extroverted when they find people who they can actually connect with. I feel like giving feedback, whether it's good or bad, is really good. And even with me, when teaching or when I'm like leading with specific artists or studio stuff I've done, I'm not trying to be blunt, but I like to be blunt, because then it feels like, oh, if he praises, he really means it. He's not just walking around giving everyone a trophy, because the goal is, you know, you want them to get better at what they're doing.
You know, that was another layer of accomplishment. You know, I would come home some days after certain people would have successes, and I would be more excited that they were feeling happy and fulfilled in their own job than I would be if I had made something that looked pretty that day.
Well, yeah, because I feel like you if you make something, it's for you, and you're like, yeah, it looks great. But I feel like if you can coach someone and they're going to bring their energy and their positivity, and then it's going to affect someone else. It's going to keep on growing.
Yeah,
because that's all it takes. I feel like, you know, there's been a couple of studios where I worked at where I specifically hired someone just because I saw potential, but I just loved their outlook on things, and they churned the energy of that team around, because, you know, you're working on a lot of stuff sometimes that are like these amazing games, but sometimes it's not that you don't care about it, or it's not like you don't recognize what's going on. It's just sometimes you lose that passion. It takes one person to come in and be like, yeah, can you believe we get to work on this? Or I figured out how to be playing too. And you're like, man, it is pretty cool. So you've had some examples when you're working in like at Gearbox where you're working on content that not just, you know, I feel like when you think about your professional satisfaction, sometimes it's not just about the studio that you're working at or tools or like the skills you're going, but like you're kind of mentioning that sometimes the projects you're working on extend out to people who are actually playing them.
Yeah. Yeah, Randy always did this awesome email. Sometimes it was every day, or sometimes it was weekly, but it was called Why We Fight. Yeah. And he would send around an email. It was fan mail or a story about, you know, from people who had played our games. And I loved the framing of the entire principle. You know, one of the things that he was big on was, you know, there are people who are struggling in any given day with what they're going through in their lives, and a video game isn't simply a video game for them. It can be an escape, and, you know, we're making things for people to relate to. And so we've had throughout the Borderlands life, we've had so many exciting stories and, you know, people who've met their spouse playing co-op in Borderlands. That's happened.
That's crazy.
So many times. It's pretty crazy. And I love that. One time years ago, we even created within the studio, some guys put together a engagement claptrap video for a guy who was going to be proposing to his girlfriend.
I don't have time for this. I've got better things to do than help some schmuck hit on his main squeeze.
Yeah. They're like, hey, we're going to do this. It's kind of like, you know, the people that'll go to, you know, halftime at a sporting event.
Yeah.
You know, Gearbox was always really good at kind of trying to support that and, you know, share that love back with the people who were playing our games. And then, you know, some of the stories that were the ones that really were heartbreaking, but, you know, again, it changed your perspective on it. And that was, you know, I won't say names, but, you know, we've had, you know, where people were sick, and really struggling with their health. And, you know, they would say, hey, you know, before my friend passed, it was awesome that we were able to, even though he couldn't go outside anymore because of, you know, it was too weak, we were able to play Borderlands every day and be Vault Hunters. And
I think that's what people don't realize too. It's like, I think now games is, there's always been kind of a little bit of negative like stereotype towards that stuff. Cause like anything out there, there's always going to be someone that does it excessively. Like, yeah, pizza's terrible if you eat a whole pizza every day. Games are terrible if you stay up till like 7 a.m. every night playing them. But if you can find that balance, it's not only does it help with like social skills and problem solving, but you know, it, right now in the pandemic, there's been people who can't go anywhere, and a lot of like saving grace. A lot of people I've talked to before, like they will online, they'll play games together online, and it's like having that fun that keeps them sane throughout that day. And it's really cool to hear that kind of stuff. So as we're wrapping up, I mean, and I think we've talked about this a few times already about distinguishing between like your professional and personal work, but to kind of like dig a little further into there,
sure.
I have a question just personal work wise, like what's geeking you out? Like 2022, there's a lot of cool movies, cool games, cool tech coming out. Like personal work wise, is any of this new stuff coming out? And if so, if you feel like talking about it, like which ones are going to really like influence you? Is any of that influence that's coming out, like, is that pouring into your actual professional life too?
I would say so. I'll tell you the thing that I've been the most excited about was, was, you know, having the opportunity to work with the Unreal 5 early access has been awesome. Getting a look at Lumen and Nanite, you know, firsthand. And I was really impressed with the Matrix demo that Epic released.
Yeah.
For so many reasons. One, as a game developer, seeing a studio that said, hey, our tech works. It works so well that we're going to actually let you not only see a demo of it at a E3 or a GDC, but we're going to put it on a marketplace. We're going to let you download it. We're going to let you play with it. We're going to put it on platform and show you that it runs at the resolution and the performance that we said it would. Because I think it was a, you know, I think Unreal 5 for me, I get the excitement I got from watching the id Tech 5, you know, pre-rage stuff from the 2009 era. I think I feel the same kind of like giddy excitement. And, you know, there's naturally, because it both technologies felt like voodoo watching it, you know, from the outside. You're like, this can't be, you know, naturally the developers were all cynics. And so you're like, well, yeah, I mean, maybe this will work and maybe this won't. And so seeing them take the Matrix demo and be like, here it is. Play with it. Gamers and developers alike, I think that took a lot of testicular fortitude, and they, you know, I commend them for that. So I'm really excited to get my hands on, you know, the final Lumen tech and spend a lot of time understanding how to bend the will of real-time GI to, you know, to my artistic will. And that's primarily what I'm the most excited about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be exciting just because you know, Carl's actually doing a bunch of work with me at Epic and Unreal on stuff like that too. So it's going to be fun to see. He's going to be handling the Lumen course. So that'll be fun to hear, see him
in
that content, sharing it. Because then that kind of comes full circle. So it's like you're able to take what you're geeking out on and then share that. And then hopefully someone else is going to watch that and be like, oh, this is amazing. And then they're going to geek out that way. I find it harder to discuss these kind of things with people who are younger, not because of the age gap. I think it's more or less the tech that has changed in the past 20 years since I started working in games. You see true progression. Like I started on PlayStation 1, on PlayStation 5 now. So seeing the difference between tech with PlayStation 1 and then like watching Lord of the Rings come out and the Matrix, you're like, these look vastly different. But now Matrix came out in the Matrix demo and you're looking at that and you're like, Jesus. They used Unreal 5 in the actual Matrix movie. They used it in a lot of the scenes. So you're like, oh, the line's there. So my mind's still blown. And like, but someone that's like new to this and it's like, well, there's this expectation of like, well, that's just how it looks. Well, it's because you grew up with like a PlayStation 3 and a 4. So you're just used to this tech. I remember when PlayStation 2 went to PlayStation 3 and they were like, well, we can do normal maps. What?
And it
blew my mind. And then like HDR lighting, I was like, oh my God. Like, so these technical steps, I am curious to be like, what's going to happen like down the road, like 10 years from now. But for me specifically, like, you know, just the way that I feel like I'm curious to see what's going to happen, especially now since Netflix is jumping into games about, are we going to see, I mean, like Night Owl Studios is with them. I wonder if they're going to do more episodic content. So it's kind of like, remember what Telltale Games used to do? Telltale's back, right? I mean, like, they went away and they came back, I think.
I don't know. I hope so. I know my kids have discovered The Walking Dead. Maybe I'm selling myself out as a terrible parent here, but my 13-year-old and 11-year-old have been. They came downstairs the other day.
It's more of a cartoon. That's fine.
That was my justification too. But they came down with dollar bills. They're like, "Dad, can we buy seasons?" And I was like, "Kids,
but I like that.
Come with me to my game library. Let's, you know, here's the game. Play it." But no, I hope they're back because they love their games. Yeah. So
maybe that's the thing I really liked about. I think even I mean, we were talking about earlier, like how level design now is more specified. But like I remember games even back in the day, it's like there was no such thing as designers. It was like an artist and a programmer. The programmer would be doing the design and so forth.
Yeah.
So it's like as the game tech has grown, the memory has grown, the expectations have grown, the teams grow, all that stuff. So it's like everything's more nitty gritty. But I feel like the games keep on getting bigger and bigger in scale because they feel like that's the expectation. But one of the most recent games that I played that I love that's been out actually for several years now, Inside by Playdead.
It's
3 hours long.
Yeah.
I played it for a lot longer just because I was like looking at everything.
Yes. Yeah. You're onto something though. There is, you know, we always make the joke about the Jeff Goldblum thing where he's like, you know, you were so busy, you know, with whether or not you could, you didn't think if you should.
Yeah.
But the Hollywood has had that problem for me for so many years, where they said, well, we can show everything all the time.
Yeah.
So let's just do it. But I think of, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time is Escape from New York.
Oh yeah.
And the budget for that film was so small, and what they had to do was, you know, you had to use a lot of imagination. You know, I think because of that, I don't remember who said this, but someone had mentioned at a time that, you know, whenever the viewer has to use their own imagination, there's a more personal ownership over the creative, you know, item, whether that's film or game or music.
I agree with you.
And so, you know, now we're getting to the stage where, you know, everything is epic, establishing shots constantly. You know, a movie I watched recently, I think it's one of the best movies I've seen in 10 years, was the movie Upgrade.
And it was directed by... Oh, yeah, that one's great. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, a director was...
Look alike. Well,
yeah, exactly. Had a director named Lee Whannell, and he said that he struggled a lot with, you know, working with his effects guys and saying, like, hey, like, we don't have to do... You know, the budget is small. It's okay to make this a more personal story. So in the beginning of that film, there's kind of an establishing shot where you can say this is the future. Mm-hmm. And then from that moment forward, it goes into the personal story about this man and his wife.
Yeah.
And his journey. And it doesn't, we don't jump back out to giant epic, you know.
Another studio that is Looper, the one in 2012. Like they a couple establishing shots, and it's just like, I agree with you. Like, I feel like sometimes we see these games and it's like they hired Steven Spielberg and Michael Bay to just be like, just blow everything up and make it. It's like, no, don't be afraid of scaling down. And that's why I'm kind of excited to see that now Netflix is getting into this time of games.
Yes.
Yeah. Will we get more episodic content? And if you as a creator, does that mean that you could take your AAA vision and be like, well, we can pare it down into these chapters. So A, you're not spending so much on an extended one. You can front load it. And then less of a game, because I feel like you see how much you see the billions and billions of dollars that like Apple and Netflix and Amazon and Hulu are putting into their streaming libraries. It's only going to be a little bit of time till they're doing the exact same thing with this gaming stuff. So
yeah, and you have Game Pass and Sony's equivalent, and you know they need things to keep those storefronts exciting. So I think those smaller, you know, easy access games are super important as well, especially for gamers like me. I'm going to out myself, but you know, I'm at the age where I'm more excited about making the game than playing a game.
Oh yeah.
Because unfortunately I feel like in the game industry, there's been a lot less innovation on the design side than there has been on the technology and art side.
Well, I think we get the tech and we're obsessed with like a tech demo as opposed to, you know, I got the book behind me, but I really enjoyed Last of Us. And the point where I just thought it was taking an A to B scenario, not reinventing the wheel. It was just kind of making it feel like it was in grounded locations and just like giving you a simple, go here, go there, but here's realistic obstacles you can encounter. But I can geek out with you stuff for a long time, but thanks for like coming on for chatting. Like, I would love to do another one where we just talk about, because I really, another thing that I think about without digging in too deep is that there's this, like, you know, people who are working in games need to be able to interpret the world around them, whether that's travel or just walking outside. But even beyond that, like, just good cinema, good TV.
I've always joked with my wife, we're huge horror movie fans, you know this, but
yeah.
I've always joked with her, I was like, if I became a billionaire, I would start a production company and I would give up-and-coming directors $1 million and that would be it.
Yeah.
To make horror films. I'd be like, no, because I can't think of a horror movie that was good that had a huge budget.
Yeah. Because they'll spend it on some CGI and it just looks terrible.
Yeah.
But awesome. So thank you for joining us. Where can we find you?
Yeah, you can find me on ArtStation
/ Carl Shard. ArtlSHEDD.
That's right. And I'm on Instagram.
I saw you on Instagram now. So
yeah, it's just Carl E. Shed. There's nothing, but you don't have to worry about seeing my cooking or my opinions. It's just... it's just a portfolio site. So, but if you're on ArtStation, you're seeing it all. Yeah. The Instagram is just the second hand.
Is there anything we should keep an eye out for Ruckus Games? There's anything we should take a look at, or will you be sharing that when you're on ArtStation?
We will be sharing that as soon as we can. We'll hopefully be working with some wonderful partners soon and be looking for fantastic talent to help grow Ruckus. But that is
Keep us tuned.
Yeah.
Keep us ahead on that, because, you know, you heard it first, everyone. Talent.
Thanks for listening to the CG Spectrum podcast. For more information and links related to this episode, head to cgspectrum.com/podcast. See you next time.